It's the Geeky Waffle Podcast.
Happy 100th anniversary, Disney. anniversary.
I did not see Wish in theaters when it came out. I actually had tickets, but I got sick. But I finally have watched it since it's on Disney Plus streaming. And you know that gif from America's Next Top Model where Tyra's just yelling, like, I was rooting for you. I was rooting for this so badly because I assumed, because it's happened so many times before, that the internet was just me because the lead was a woman of color. Like, yeah. Turning Red got really roasted online and it was fantastic. So I thought, you know what? Maybe it won't be too bad. It was bad.
I went in nervous because it was a lot of people whose opinions I generally tend to agree with, who had really specific problems with this. So I did see it in theaters. I saw it like a week after it came out or something. And I was like, oh no. As soon as I saw their critiques, I'm like, I'm afraid. And I was right to be? Question mark? So
this is a 60-second animated Disney movie. And they're saying, hey, it's our 100th year. Let's celebrate with a movie. So we have three main issues with this movie, but we do have a few nice things and positive things that we would like to discuss at the end. So if you're thinking this is going to be all a downer, this was not the worst
movie I've ever seen by a long shot.
I think because it's Disney, our expectations are so high.
It's one of those things where if a movie is just bad, I will write it off as bad. I'm disappointed because there's a good movie in here.
You're not mad, you're just disappointed.
I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. There's a good movie in this movie. And some of the parts really jump out. And some of the parts I'm like, this smells like a decision that was made in a boardroom.
Yes, okay, so let's just give a...
Yeah.
Let's give a basic review of what this movie is in case it's been a couple months since you've seen it or you haven't seen it and you just want to see... two crazy people talk.
And we've been having mental breakdowns.
I watched this movie four times, guys. I watched this movie four times. Damn. I have listened to the soundtrack multiple times while driving. If I'm going to critique something, I need to know it. I need to understand it. And I want to come from a good faith of critiquing something. Because I know so many people worked on this and there is some heart in there. But let's talk about this movie. Okay, so our main character is Asha. She is 17, almost 18. She lives in the city of Rosa, where wishes are granted randomly by King Magnifico. He created this kingdom many years ago. See, look at this. I can do the rhymes. He has all these wishes that are like little bubbles in the thing, and he chooses whose wishes get to be granted. When people give their wish when they're 18 or when they come to the island, they forget the wish and they don't have that ambition or anything anymore. Asha is like, hey, let me be the apprentice. We don't know why she really wants to be the apprentice. That's never really explained. She tries to be the apprentice and she looks and she realizes, hey, a lot of these wishes aren't going to be granted, including her grandfather, who is 100, like Disney's 100. See, I've watched this four times. Okay, let me do this really quick. She's like, hey, okay, wishes aren't going to be granted. I didn't write any of this down, just by the way. She's like, that's not cool. And then she gets sad. She wishes on a star.
And the king snaps at her immediately.
Yeah, the king is mean.
He's mean.
But everybody thinks the king's great. She wishes on a star comes down. They're like, let's get the wishes. That doesn't work. She gets her friends. She has so many friends. Too many friends. Nobody should have that many friends to help her. The king goes really evil.
We have that many friends. She has like eight friends.
I don't remember them. Okay. They defeat the king. Blah, 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 blah. Everyone gets their wishes back and their ambition back. Okay. That's just the basis. That's the basis.
That's the loose. Yeah. She gets her seven friends and they defeat the king together with the help of the queen.
Yes. Okay.
That's.
Yes. The queen. He's married. Yes. Okay. So my main thing is, do people who give their wishes never tell their friends and family? Because when I was 18, I did not shut up about what I wanted. Like,
I'm wondering, because it's like such a fundamental part of them that's being treated like a part of their soul. If this is like the heart's desire that you've like never shared with anyone, like not I want a new pair of shoes, but like the thing that you hold like closest to you. I'm wondering if that's
okay. Well, for example, one of the wishes we see granted was somebody wanted to be the best seamstress in town. I would assume maybe before she made that wish, she was doing a little sewing and being like, I want to be the best that ever was.
Maybe if you live in Rosas, then you know that the wish you give the king, you can't divulge. Like you're just growing up, like you knowing not to share that.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe she is a seamstress, but maybe people aren't like, oh, I wonder if that's her wish. Like, that's just a thing she does.
Does she lose interest in that after she gives her wish? I really think what they should have done.
Her ambition.
Yeah. And she just was like, okay, I'll just do some alterations.
She's like, I'm fine just sewing. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think they should have used the Cinderella thing is if you tell someone your wish, it won't come true. Remember, like, she's talking to all the animals and she's like, I can't tell you. Can tell you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that would have been one line to address that.
It was very simple.
Did I freeze?
So just for a second. Yeah. The bad internet room.
It's raining.
That impacts the internet.
It's raining. So the signal is not great. And it's like, I have one internet that's so good at everything and won't work on StreamYard. And then the worst internet is the only internet that works on StreamYard. I cannot explain it. Anyway,
just like this movie.
If I freeze, just plow past me. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. I got things to say. So my question is, why did the king show Asha his wishes? Why did they have a duet, which we will talk more about when we get to a different segment?
Put a pin in that. I got things to say.
Oh, gosh. So all this week, I have been texting Arzu or talking to Arzu about this movie. And she saw it months ago. And just today, she rewatched it. And guess who started getting a lot of text messages?
I started having a mental breakdown.
Thank you. You were where I was. I feel seen, like the little baby goat says. He feels seen.
I don't mean to exaggerate, but I haven't felt quite this angry at holes in logic since The Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, no. Oh, no. And I know what happened last
time. That's the worst movie I've ever seen. But it wasn't that bad, but just like me going, but why, over and over again, felt very similar to where I was at 5 years ago.
So I got actually my friend Krista to watch this because I have talked to her twice this week, and both times conversations have come up about this movie. I'm very sorry, Krista. She's very excited to watch this, and I apologize. But she only got to the singing squirrel part, and she was shocked to find, when I was talking to her, but the father, Asha's father, passed away when she was 12. And nothing really comes of that, except that he's like, look to the stars. And it really feels like there should be more to that.
I actually like that there wasn't more to that, because that felt like early Disney to me, because like they have all lost a parent. Yeah. And other than like Ariel, who I guess we learned later, her mom died because of a human, but like, realistically, like all of them have lost a parent, and it doesn't inform anything about their arc except that they don't have the other parent.
The thing is, like,
and Cinderella, I guess it's the reason she has a stepmother, but like,
yeah,
beyond that, like the loss doesn't inform the arc. So I'm like, that's actually really old Disney to not make that like a thing. So that
the thing is with Beauty and the Beast, Belle and Ariel and Little Mermaid, the mother is not brought up at all.
But we know they don't have one.
Yes, we know that. But I'm like, why bring him up?
Because to the star motif. Okay. That's like why. Because later, when she's like, I wished on a star, and one of her friends who Gabo. Are not the stars was like, what are you, five? Like, so it's like,
Gabo. I've seen this four times now.
Gabo, yeah, the little grumpy one. Because I guess that's a childish thing to do, even in this world where like wishes are a tangible thing.
Yeah, they're like, this isn't a fairy tale.
Like, yes. You literally read took your wish out of your chest and handed it to a guy. Like, wishing
a sorcerer.
The weirdest thing that's happened this week.
I did like that she was trying to be the apprentice, the sorcerer's apprentice, like Mickey Mouse, without being like, wink, kind of thing.
Without like enchanting a broom.
Yeah. And that kind of goes into characters. There's a lot of issues I feel with the character arc, especially with Asha. I don't feel like she has an arc.
No.
Did you Okay, good. I was like,
she doesn't. Like that. This is my problem with modern media. It's like, there is no opportunity for our main characters, our heroines in particular, to like make mistakes. Even if the mistake is like Belle or Ariel or Jasmine, where like the biggest thing you could say about them is they're like rude sometimes, they still have like an arc in their story, right? Whereas her thing is like she starts off wanting a thing and this avenue doesn't work. So she pursues this avenue and eventually this avenue, and then she gets the thing. Like she has a very linear journey. Things are happening to her. She's encountering obstacles, but like she doesn't, other than learning to use magic, which was not something that came up that at
interests
all
her off the top or anything.
Like if that had interested her and that's why she wants to be the king's apprentice, then this is a great arc, because then it's like you don't need the king to learn to use magic because it's been in you all along, because you can learn it some other way because of your connections, like whatever, because of your connections to the stars. That's an arc. Learning that like to achieve the things you want, there's not only one way to do it, like who you are all along would help you get there. Awesome. But that doesn't happen. She just wants to be the apprentice for some reason and then learns to use magic for some reason. And these two things don't actually have anything to do with each other.
If she had learned magic in theory, because the rule is that only King Magnifico can use magic and grant wishes in the kingdom. So she can be like, I studied the history of this. And that could be another reason why they bonded and why he's like, oh, I should show her these wishes. She's cool. She's like really admires me kind of thing. That would have bonded them more, and I think would have made more sense when she's given a magic wand. And I think maybe this was in a first draft or something like that. In the wish song, she says she always listens when someone says no. So I thought maybe she was supposed to be like a type A personality, always rule abiding, not questioning anything. And her arc was like, oh, I shouldn't just question things at face value. I should question things. I shouldn't just take things at face value. I think that would have been a stronger story if it's, because it's all the kids at the end are like, oh, revolution. And you're like, what?
Okay, that's a thing now. My thing with this is not just with Asha's arc, although it's very glaring with Asha's arc, is it feels like there's things missing that like used to be there. There used to be connective tissue and it's not there anymore. Asha's arc is like the glaring one, is that like, because the king, like you said, being the only one to use magic, he's the only one we really see using magic. Her then using magic connects back to that, except there is no connective tissue in the movie. And I don't need everything overly explained to me. I'm like, we are reasonably intelligent people. We can suss that out. And we don't need like, I don't need to see her like training to use it. Like, I'm not here for that kind of toxic conversation, but an interest in it prior to doing it.
It would have been interesting to have her more, of a yin and yang to the king. They both are interested in magic, him getting magic and maybe eventually, you know, being seduced by it or taking it for the wrong reason while she is focus on helping and not just giving a wish, but helping facilitate a wish, which is what happens at the end.
Exactly.
What a fairy godmother does is doesn't just make a wish happen. If you take these steps, like if you see Cinderella, Cinderella tried to go to the ball, but horrible people stopped her.
She gave her an outfit and a ride. She didn't push her in the door. She didn't tell her what to do. She didn't enchant her to be able to talk to the prince. She just got her the coat, like the ride and the clothes. And she's like, okay, go.
So it would have been better if there was more of a contrast between the two, because those are the best hero villain dynamics.
We've been talking can we talk about villains?
Yeah, let's talk about the villain.
Okay.
Or villains. So originally the queen was supposed to also be a villain, which hot is all I'm saying.
Which she fully should have been. It's like they're afraid. It's like they think it's unfeminist for a woman to be a villain when her husband is also a villain. Like they can be villains together. Like that's like it's a couple doing couple things. It's an activity.
Because honestly, her not being a villain and turning against him, or as she says, like being loyal to Rosa's. There's so much emotions with that that did not get to be explored at all. That she's like been married to this guy for decades, probably. I don't know.
And she's like,
yeah, he's stuck in a mirror. And she's like, oh, you liked mirrors. She's a little snarky. I would be sobbing if I thought like the person I loved was actually like turned to the dark side. Like, give me some, you're breaking my heart.
I actually forgot that the queen flips to the good side. In retrospect, like thinking back on it, having seen it like in November, I thought she was also a villain. I forgot until I rewatched it that she flips.
She's never evil. But, she's trying to pull him back.
Yeah.
But he's like, no. And then she's like, I'm going to go help these kids.
I have a problem with how his like villain reveal unfolded. There's been a thing now about like the surprise villain. Like Hans is a really good example of this. Like you don't know he's the villain until he reveals himself as the villain. And
Zootopia the sheep.
They're like, yeah. Like prior to that, like earlier Disney movies, it was like, it was obvious they were the villain. And yeah, they're drawn really sinister. It's obvious they're the villain. But the thing about how those reveals unfolded, and I'm thinking like Disney Renaissance in particular, is like, it was such a good slow burn of villainy, because if you think of The Little Mermaid, there is an extended period where Ursula has her villain song and Ariel still makes a conscious choice to trust this person because she's going to get what she wants. It winds up being a mistake, but she makes the choice to trust them. The Lion King, Simba does not know Scar is a villain at all. And he like rolls with it a little bit. Belle is vaguely annoyed by Gaston. But everybody else is like, he's nice and he's hot. So she's like, okay, it's probably just me. Like, she doesn't tell him he's a monster until like there's 10 minutes left in the movie. So she goes the bulk of the movie thinking about him, or she's just like, I don't really like you, but that might be a me thing. Like, all of these things, there is this level of trust between the hero and the villain until somewhere past the midpoint. And King Magnifico flips out on Asha about like the wishes and basically reveals himself as the antagonist. Like, I'm never going to grant your grandfather's wish in the first 20 minutes of this 90-minute movie.
I just want to say the level of petty this king, I respect it. When he does the wish ceremony and he holds a syllable on the name of the person who's going to get the wish, he's like, and the person who's been waiting for so long, someone else's name, but it's had the first syllable, just like the grandfather. So I'm like, oh, dude is like making her hurt. I do appreciate that.
So he's clearly revealing himself as the bad guy here. So Asha doesn't trust him from the get-go. And yeah, the rest of the kingdom does, but like, I don't know. There's something in the way that's written is like, you needed to keep Asha's trust longer. So going back to our idea of like, if she had wanted to learn magic and thought apprenticing was the only way to do it, if he had not flipped the hell out at her right away and had drawn her in as the apprentice, and she spends like the first 30 minutes of the movie as his apprentice, then realizes something's wrong, and then there's that turn, and then she goes and tries to overthrow the king. We've known he's the bad guy the whole time because he looks like a bad guy. He's drawn like a bad guy, but the suspense in narrative would have been much stronger.
I think he's drawn more like a prince, really.
No, his eyebrows are too dark.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay.
He's got the Disney villain brow
thing. Oh, yeah.
Villain.
But
hot.
Another thing about, hot. Villain hot. If villain, why hot? This is another thing about Asha that I'm tired of, and it's the adorkable Disney heroine. We've had enough of those. Let's get a different kind of girl.
I'm done.
So Rapunzel and Anna make sense as being adorable because they are
isolated. They don't talk to people.
Rapunzel has Pascal and Anna has a couple servants, and that's it for majority of their upbringing. We see Asha has 7 friends, a goat, family. I don't know what the goat does anything, but
she works as a tour guide. She has a customer facing job.
She's a public speaker and she just got like, and she's good at it because she just got a couple people to join this cult, really. she does this regularly. That wasn't her first time showing off the kingdom. And I understand, like, before the job interview, she's nervous. That's understandable, but it's throughout the whole thing. It's like this, like, oh, whoa, what happened kind of thing. And I don't know. Maribel, I understand also because she's like the youngest and she is isolated from her family because she's the one without powers kind of thing. But
the awkwardness makes sense if you're an isolated person. Like if you're not super social. Asha is.
Yeah. And she has to be for her job. She has to talk to new people. It doesn't make sense to me.
Which again, going back to this arc we invented of like Asha's wish to learn magic, if that had been a thing throughout, then when she goes into the woods and discovers the fallen star, which let's put a pin in that because I have feelings.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
But like when she goes into the forest and discovers the star and discovers her magic, if she had been training to do magic, her approach to this whole thing would have been different. She wouldn't have been surprised. She probably would have embraced it. Maybe she would have embraced it too hard. And like had to be reined back a bit and be like, it's a lot more organic. It's like about your heart. Like the magic comes from the heart. It's not from the, you know, whatever Magnifico's been telling you. Like that's not what it is. This is what magic is. And that would have been, again, a much stronger arc because then she would have gone from this like magic is this one thing practiced in this one way to like magic is how you feel or whatever the lesson there was.
That would have been great. I just need a different Disney heroine character type.
Yes.
It's enough.
Where are the competent heroines?
Yeah. She's nearly 18. She has a job.
Like, give me my Bells. Give me Esmeralda. Give me, you know, like, give me Jasmine. Give me the girls who are like, they have it together and they have other problems to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, just mix it up a little bit. That's all we're asking. You can bring an adorable one out in a couple years. Just give us a couple, you know, socially capable. And
I don't know. A very specific ick with Disney movies. And it's when they use things like, so like in the middle of dialogue. I know Rapunzel does this a couple times. They do it in Rish a couple times. I'm like, you're not Valley Girls. We're not talking like that. Like, it's meant to make them sound, I think, more relatable, but it just takes me right out of it. And I acknowledge I might be the only one who feels this way, but I just wanted to express that somewhere.
With language, with, like, not even slang and stuff like that, I forgive more when it's a fictional, like, fantasy world, especially for kids, because they need to, like, understand more.
They can understand like an awkward transition without like or whatever, like it, because all that does is date it.
Gotcha. Yeah, there are a few things dated in this one. The goat, when the star wears pajamas, he's like, oh, I feel seen. And I was like, that's already dated. Like, that's modern language animation dates it. But that's the issue with all animation. Animation takes so long. Your script takes years. So by the time it came out, it's already dated.
But there's like, but you can use more neutral language, but the minute you try to make it sound contemporary is when it sounds dated immediately. And like the like, I am aware I say like a lot, but the way
I'm the one who edits
in these movies, I say it a lot. I know I say it a lot, but the way they use it in movies immediately dates the scene, even if we are still saying it all the time. I'm like, this is not going to port over well to like the next generation.
Okay.
But that's just like my very specific problem.
We have this is a specific problem too that I'm very excited to get your take on. And that's the original concept of making Star actually like a humanoid love interest for Asha. The concept art looks so cute.
Buckle up, we're going to be here for a couple hours. So for those of you that don't know me well, if I'm not talking geeky stuff and I'm not talking Star Wars, I am talking romance. It's primarily what I read. I write it. I am the most, of all genres, I am most engaged with romance. I love it. It's very important to me. And I feel as though Disney of late has forgotten that this is a thing they can do. It's not the only thing they can do. And I get that it's not the only thing they can do, but they have forgotten that this is something they used to do. My problem with this is having Star be a love interest would have fixed, I think, a lot of the problems in the movie. And I'm not saying that because Asha should only be defined by her romantic arc. Like, we have just spent the last 20 minutes talking about what her magic arc should have been and her like self-growth arc. But having Star be that love interest would have, one, acted as a great counterpoint to maybe Asha's like rigidity with magic or whatever. And because he would be somebody she doesn't know, like she has just met.
Also, if she was that rule abiding type A personality, you have this magical kind of imp pup like character.
Yeah.
You could say that would have been great to play off.
Exactly. And he would have like been like, no, magic is this chaos thing. And then the answer is actually it's somewhere in the middle. Like, because look where the chaos got you. It could have been very Stardust coded. Like, it does not diminish a woman's arc in fiction, in any fiction, for her to have love in her life. I feel like anybody who feels that way, who feels as though a woman having romance diminishes her as a person, should either remain single forever or leave their partner immediately, because obviously you're diminishing your own arc. Like, I don't know. I know fiction's not a one to real life, but if told correctly, it is a compliment to somebody's arc. It accompanies their arc. It doesn't weaken it. And having this Star be this cutesy little bouncy baby thing is cute, and we can definitely try to sell toys of that thing, but
except they're all 40% off now at Disney World.
Because if they had Asha and Star, we're just calling him Star because he doesn't have a name. If they had Asha and Star as like a couple at the heart of this, we could have had a Valentine's Day thing. We could have had another couple thing. We could have done the deluxe doll with the two of them, and that would have looked beautiful. Like, Disney, for a company that has made so much of its money on this magic romance, happy ever after stuff, is so afraid of it now. And I don't understand why. This is like something that your company was built on, was this fairy tale idea of everything, including love. And it's like, it's not a bad word. And I almost hesitate to say that having her only friends be a bunch of children, because they're all teenagers, except maybe Dahlia, I don't know. But like, they're all 18 and under kids, and a goat and a little bouncy Star baby is a little bit infantilizing. That this is all she has going on. Do you know what I mean?
And it's like, it's very weird to have a group of teenagers and nobody be paired off. That's all I'm saying.
It's like, teenagers are interested in each other. Hormones are a raging.
So I was watching,
and nobody's making eyes at anybody else.
And so I was watching the behind the scenes, like the little docs they have on Disney Plus, and they said one of the reasons they made Star into the bouncy ball thing is because they felt like the humanoid version took away from Asha's story. And I'm like, not if you tell the story.
What story?
That's true. Honestly, okay, think about this. He has maybe, like at the end, he has to go back up to the sky. Like, she has to learn to let go. She has to learn to be strong. She could learn so much.
Disney wouldn't do that if it's a romance, the happy ever after. But then it's a Stardust thing of like, how do you reconcile this star that has to go back to the sky with this woman who doesn't want to, and somebody, and he would probably have to, which again would be like a reverse Little Mermaid. Like, he would choose to stay.
It would be nice.
You know what I mean?
I do see just over and over again, and not just Disney movies, but it's usually the woman who has to change herself or give up something to stay with the man in the fairy tale. There are some exceptions, like Hercules decides to stay with Megara at the end, which maybe that's why I like it so much, because it changes that a little bit. But it would have been really refreshing to see. And that kind of goes into...
Wait, the final button on that, they could have, because this is such an homage to other Disney movies, it could have been like, we could have got a little of Star's backstory, and he like is curious about the world and like is curious about humans, like Ariel. And when he gets the opportunity to go, then he's like, this is amazing. It's not what I thought it would be. And then realizes what it is and then makes that active choice to like be a part of that world. You know what I mean? Like, then that would have been another homage to another thing.
Yeah.
But like, you can't say that having this love interest be a bouncy star baby instead diminishes from Asha's arc when you haven't given her much of an arc. So it's like, what arc is it taking away from? There is no arc.
Yeah. And speaking of Star, he is adorable and
extremely
cute. And they said he was like, that design was based on the first thing animators do, which is a bouncing ball, which I love that little add-on. And I love that Asha does like little animations of goats. Yeah. The king is not impressed with that. Like, I like those little Easter eggs, not even Easter eggs. They add something to the story, but I don't feel like the Star has that much personality. Asha cares about him and says like she understands it, but I think he needed to talk.
How funny would it be if like Star the humanoid comes to Earth, falls to Earth, has this opportunity to help this woman, Asha, struggling with her magic, and the little star baby comes with him and she's like, is that your pet? And he's like, that's my boss. Like,
I thought you were gonna say that's my son. No, that's hilarious.
Like, that's my boss. Like the little star baby is the senior star, and like the humanoid guy works for him. That way we still have the little bouncy cute star and we can still put it on a t-shirt and we can still sell merch, but also not losing the little, like, the romantic angle that Asha and Star would have had. And it just devastates me that there's this good movie about this woman learning to use her magic in spite of this evil king and queen with the help of her star love interest. We don't have that movie. This movie we completely made up.
Because I was broken too.
We're comparing this very real Disney movie to this fictional Disney movie that we have made up.
But no, there is concept art, and this was something that was considered.
No, I know the romance arc was considered, but like the magic arc that we just made up, okay. Keep referring to like it's fact, but it should have been.
Okay, speaking of Star and Asha's possible love interests, let's talk about the song. Oh gosh, where did it go?
Let's talk about the music, man.
Okay. If your name is Julia Michaels or Benjamin Rice, please turn it off now. And if you're watching, because this is the meanest I've ever been about a work of media.
I don't feel as mean about this for the record, but go on.
I don't even know if I should say what.
Maybe you shouldn't.
I have written. It's mean.
Maybe don't say it.
Yeah.
We're trying to get
Yeah. Julia Michaels said in a roundtable with, I think it was Vanity Fair or Hollywood Reporter, I get this too. No, Hollywood Reporter roundtable. She said that she was given like about 3 weeks to write songs. They didn't have a final like story. All they gave her was like, this is Asha. She's like an activist. She's trying to change things. Write a song about it. So it's not all her fault. It's not all their fault. It sounded messy, especially when you have two people who have no musical theater or musical background. This is not how you do this. Elton John worked with Tim Rice when he did Lion King. You have someone there who has done this before. You do not give them a $200 million movie that's supposed to celebrate your 100th.
Yeah.
Not the best decisions.
There's a cadence to musical theater and like a structure to musical theater, both in terms of like where the songs go and like how the songs sound. That, yeah, not everything needs to sound like Howard Ashman-y. I get that. But like Lin-Manuel Miranda has background in theater. Like he did an arts degree and has a background in theater. So by the time he's writing music for Disney, he's got an idea of how this works. Julia Michaels, I'm not as familiar with Benjamin Rice's music, but Julia Michaels is like a pop singer and like does pop music.
She's written Justin Bieber. She's written Justin Bieber songs like Sorry, which is a bop.
I love Selena Sorry. Gomez. She's a good.
Yeah, these are solid songs.
She's good at what she does. She's a good songwriter. I think she just needed a musical theater person to work with her.
100%. I feel like they set her up to fail and that's not fair to her.
The thing about the songs is she's set up to fail because One, like you said, they didn't give her the full story. So she's not entirely sure what she's writing to. But then also, on the complete flip side of that, the songs, for the most part, are incredibly, like, context-specific. They're specific to what is happening on screen right then. And I know that's the case of a lot with a lot of musical theater, but they will have, like, the, like an opera, the songs that are, like, the plot, and then the songs that are there to show off the singing. Like, they have both.
But this usually
is all plot songs.
Yeah.
Or almost all plot songs. We're going to put a pin in At All Costs because I'm going to come back to that one.
I mean, I feel like some of these songs are just like pop songs put in, maybe a few things of exposition are added, but it's not enough to actually move the story forward much, which when you have limited time and limited song space, you need to use every word. And the thing is about musical theater and Disney movies like this is those songs are people's innermost thoughts and emotions, which you get to share. And I think it's like every song, nobody can lie in those songs. It's all the truth. So that's when you really get to know the characters and you really like empathize and learn about them. But I would like to, and just a few other things about, I don't know musical theory very well. I took a few years of voice lessons and piano, and I was very into musical theater as a kid. Very shocking that I'm now a podcaster, right? Half rhymes and imperfect rhymes are very popular in pop music. And those are two words that only have the final consonant sound and no preceding vowel or consonant sound in common, such as stopped and wet, parable and shell. So those are common in pop music. The Justin Bieber songs, the Selena Gomez songs, they all have that. Musical theater has like full rhymes. And when you're expecting that, it feels weird to you when things are off. And that's why I think people had such a reaction to this music, is it's just jarring to your brain. And just an example in like I'm a Star, this is like a half rhyme. See, we're all just little nebulas in a nursery. From supernovas, now we're grown into our history. So nursery, history, those are partial rhymes. If you look at Part of Your World, like pretty much the entire Little Mermaid, the words are very simple, but they're so clever. I don't know how Ashman did this, but he's a genius. His genius cannot be replicated. It's impossible.
Because he was good at Lin-Manuel what he did.
Lin-Manuel tried with adding the songs to The Little Mermaid. Then it quite mesh as well. And I've heard people say Lin-Manuel, like, he uses similar words again, like in the Moana song. He says island like five times. He's like, and how far I'll go. It's like, I know everybody on this island is coming on this island.
But that's a stylistic choice.
Exactly. That feels like a choice, and it feels like it shows Moana's discontent. She's stuck on this island. Everybody else is happy with this island. And then we get the line, everyone has this role in their island. Guess I should roll with mine, which is so clever, I think, my brain.
I always think, like, my thing with the songs in Wish as a whole is, like, knowing what I know now and the Star song, in part, they're the worst offenders for this, in that they are using a lot of very like complex vocabulary, which makes it sound like they're tripping over it. And it sounds more like they have put a high school poem to music.
Okay.
Because you're trying, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely. I have something that really bothered me with I'm a Star, is they did have some of that grammar, like one of the animals says, here I are. I'm a Star, which I don't know if it's supposed to be humorous. Like, oh, animal doesn't know grammar. Like, Valentino doesn't know how to count because he's a 3-week-old colt. I don't know.
That I can forgive, because that almost sounds like something they would do in the old ones, like to be funny.
Okay.
But if the rest of the song around it is more solid, then we're more forgiving of that.
Yeah. Okay. So there is a line that says, why flowers in the wind are so effortless and eloquent dancers. And that makes zero sense to me because eloquent is just about writing and speaking. Nothing to do with dancing.
I have to find the lyrics for What I Know Now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I have a few of the lyrics.
Because here. There's one lyric that bothered me and I forgot to write it down. So
I have a few. Talking. Okay. What I Know Now is a song where the teenagers with Asha are like, okay, this guy needs to be stopped. It's like a get hype song. Stars doing shadow puppets. And there are a few simple changes that could be made. Like, again, I'm not a songwriter. I know this is just like a Monday morning quarterback kind of situation where I'm saying what you could do. So Asha's singing, if it's not us, then who am one? If we don't fight, he knows he wins. That makes zero sense because he doesn't see them as a threat. So I think it should just be changed to, if we don't fight, he wins instead. And that makes it work better. And a lot of repetition with this music, with the lyrics. And when you have a limited time to say what you can say and learn more about characters and stuff like that, you got to use every word. So one of the things they say is won't stop and won't retreat or turn around, which retreat and turn around are pretty much the same. So why not say, or back down? Won't retreat or back down? So these are the same syllables.
My thing, no, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying these are the same syllables, the same kind of rhymes. Simple changes like that could have, it makes more sense, at least in my mind.
Like, I'm pretty forgiving with song lyrics. Like, if you're being a little redundant or repetitive or like using things that don't mean quite what they would mean if I was just speaking, because I'm like, you're being poetic or whatever. But my thing, it was like the first couple lines of the song, like, he's more vicious than I could have ever comprehended. This is not what I expected or intended. I'm like, those are a lot of syllables for your action song. Like, I think of Beauty and the Beast a lot. Like, Gaston is a song that makes absolutely no damn sense. Like, when they're saying it, like, it makes sense. It's goofy and it's silly, but it's simple words and it's so lyrically sharp and it just gets the point across so clearly that I'm like, I feel like in this effort to sound epic and poetic, it just all got a little muddled, which is where I think, because if you're singing pop music, you're not required to enunciate to the cheap seats. Really? Like, I know, I get that they play big stadiums, but you don't have to like enunciate for the sake of like the people sitting in the back row understanding your plot. Like, they're there for the music, they're there for the vibe, they're there to hear a song they've heard you play 100 times, like on streaming or whatever. But with musical theater, because everything has to be very clear and very enunciated and very like obvious, I feel like that's where having a musical theater person work with you helps, because then it's like, simplify the language, make your point sharper. And I know this is making it sound like we don't understand big words. We do. We are educated women. But in this context, it's too much in this context.
And I'm just thinking about the mob song, because you brought it up, Beauty and the Beast. It's okay. The bad guys getting ready for a fight. It's an example mm-hmm. of it. And we actually see them going to the castle and actually doing something. So it's an active song. This song, they're just like playing around, beating some drums. He's going to hear our feet.
They don't ever leave that. They do. That's an excellent point, is like, other than this wish where she like goes from point A to point B for her I Want song, they don't really go anywhere when they're singing. They're just like, they stop, they sing in this room, and then they resume the plot. Like, for all that these are very plot heavy songs, nothing is happening during these plot heavy songs except the singing, which might be more of a story issue than a song issue, but...
Yeah, if Julia doesn't know what's happening in the story,
then how is she doesn't know. To?
Yeah, how is she supposed to know what she can move this song to? Like, if she can move it to another scene,
she can't.
Like, if you look at the behind the scenes of Little Mermaid, of Ashman working on Beauty and the Beast and things like that, you see him like looking at the animations, talking to like. Like, it's very hands-on and very much like they're all in this together. Not High School Musical. Like, they're just like really, it's a very collaborative project. But it feels like from what she said in these roundtables and interviews is that she was given this, given a deadline, and that's it. And that's just not the way musicals work.
No, like, it's not nearly as collaborative as it should have been, which again goes back to the idea of she was being set up to, like, she was set up to fail. Not intentionally, I'm sure.
No, not intentionally, but it's probably like a corporate kind of thing.
This is like where the corporate stink comes in. It's like there's so much pressure to change all this stuff in the plot, and we can't have her have a love interest because that takes away from their plot. And like the villain has to be more obvious, and it's getting in the way of like creative instinct.
So another example of the song not fitting quite is This Is the Thanks I Get, which is King Magnifico. He just like told to the town people, he's like, hey, if you guys find out who created the light and who's causing trouble, talk to me. And then they start questioning him, which obviously they have never done. And he is ticked off. He's like, how dare they question the king? And he's like angry walking up the stairs. And it opens with the line, I can't help it if mirrors love my face, which has nothing to do with what anyone was saying. No one's like, oh, you're so vain, King Magnifico.
I think they want to tease the magic mirror on the wall thing at the end, but like, guys.
But it doesn't work at all. Like, if you compare other villain songs like Scar, Be Prepared, he's in the middle of a conversation with the hyenas being like, hey, join me. You'll never go hungry again. Let's take him off. Ursula's whole song, Poor Unfortunate Souls, which I think is the best villain song, Nobody Come At Me. It's just her singing really fast, talking really fast to convince Ariel to sign her name and sell her soul, really. And the last true villain song we had was Mothers Know Best from Tangled. It's a very passive-aggressive guilt trip. And then we have a reprise that is even darker, but both times it's convincing Rapunzel to do something, which gets you to the next step, to the next scene.
I think the best comparison, and I don't mean this in terms of quality, but just context, that I can think of for King Magnifico's song is Hellfire from Hunchback of Notre Dame, because Hellfire comes off the back of Heaven's Light, which is Quasimodo's little song, which is why Hellfire starts so abruptly. It doesn't back up into it via conversation like the other Renaissance movies, just starts. And it's Frollo alone, having a little mentee bee, honestly. Like, just talking to himself about, like, this madness he's feeling, in his case, this woman, and convincing himself over 3 minutes that what he's doing is correct and what everybody else is perceiving this to be is wrong. And, like, it's not his fault, it's everybody else's fault, it's her fault. And that's what King Magnifico's song feels like in theory. It's him by himself convincing himself that what he's been doing is correct.
Yeah, everyone else is wrong.
That's why, like, it of all things feels most like Hellfire than anything else in theory. In execution, like, we've already talked about how lyrically it's just like, in general, this movie's really not there. But also because Magnifico's been at this evil level the entire time, this song doesn't even give him anywhere to go, like, emotionally. He's just like, by the end of it, has come to this conclusion of this, like, magic staff that he wants to make with stars or whatever, but
which he was already considering before
he was already thinking about anyway.
Yeah,
so he doesn't even get to that point in this song. It's just reinforcing it, whereas like Frollo goes from I'm feeling a little conflicted to I'm really horny for this woman, to I think I'm going to kill this woman.
Like, or I think I'm going to burn all of Paris down. It's like what that song ends. It's like, yeah, okay, like, they all suck.
It burn really it down. Escalates. It goes from I'm upset right now to what if I kill this entire minority currently living in the city? Like, it really goes really far. Whereas Magnifico, like, is at the same level for the whole movie, which is another issue with what happens when you reveal your villain that early. As like, if he had been a benevolent monarch, maybe a little suspicious, but generally, like, we think he's pretty okay. And this is his turning point where he's like, I do not want to be questioned and I'm right and you're all wrong. This is his, like, flip for the audience. That's a much stronger moment, because we all know Frollo is a bad guy because he's ass. But, like, we're like, oh, he's messed up.
We don't know how bad. And how bad.
We're like, this man is not okay. Like,
he needs help. Yes.
Yeah, he needs help. He needs more help than we can give him.
Yeah, the internet made fun of this line. I let you live here for free and I don't even charge you rent. And that's just, again, repetitive. And also made me think, hey, and it's not too bad. Rent free? I don't know.
In this economy, we're like rent free.
In this economy?
So what if
in this economy, I don't have worries too? I rent free?
Like,
by the water?
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
In the Mediterranean for free?
Yeah. That goes to the intro song, which is Welcome to Rosa, which really feels like the Family Madrigal, like, wannabe song. And just contrasting the two, we learn nothing about Asha in that song. We only get what we were already told at the beginning, which I know they wanted to do the book flip thing, which is iconic, of course. But
and I love Encanto, that. I love that.
Yeah. But Encanto, the song, we find out about every single one of her family members. We find out how she feels about each of those family members and also how she feels awkward in her family. And we find out about the town, the history, everything in the, like, 3 minutes. And it's done so well, too.
Not to rewrite the movie again, but if this song had been like Asha going and be like, welcome to Rosas, here's the deal with Rosas, and explains it to them. And then as she's doing this, the people she's encountering are singing, here's the deal with Asha for us. Like, oh, like Belle. And then that like becomes Belle, another Easter egg, wink back, nod back to other Disney movies where she is explaining the town to us. They are explaining her to us. Like, for a more recent example, like Where You Are in Moana is, it does explain the village and like how the village works, but it also explains Moana because it's her parents being like, this is going to be your role. This is what you have to do. And then by following that up with her I Want song of How Far I'll Go, it's like, okay, we know what's expected of her, but she doesn't want that for herself. So the two together give us a pretty good picture of who Moana is. Whereas Rosas and this wish put together don't, no, nothing in this movie gives us a picture of who Asha is.
Even if they had, instead of having the villagers talk about who Asha is, have her do like a side, that she, why she's so nervous about meeting the king and this interview and like, oh, sure, I really want this kind of thing. So it explains more of her motivation. Absolutely. Why is she shocked that not all the wishes are going to be made? He only did 14 the previous year, and apparently that was a high percentage. So, like, do some math, girl. Is there no math in Rosas?
Asha, girl math.
Disney girl math.
Because we're talking about the balls. Can we talk about the balls?
The balls of gas? Or are we going to talk about At All Cost?
Can we talk about At All Cost?
At All Cost is the second song in this movie. It feels so weird and out of place.
It is. At All Cost on paper, if you read the lyrics, At All Cost is a love ballad. It's a duet. It is inherently and objectively a romantic song.
Sung by a 50-year-old king and a 17-year-old that might work for him.
But tuner, they are singing these achingly, like, this is a beautiful song on paper. This achingly beautiful song. They're not looking at each other good, but like, because I know some people ship it, and like, you know what? Ship it, that's fine. Like, for once in my life, I'm not doing the villain ship because I'm shipping her with the star boy that doesn't exist. But like, they're singing this extremely romantic ballad in the same space, but they're not looking at each other. They are singing these achingly gorgeous lyrics to little wish balls. And this, to me, feels like Julia Michaels wrote this song with the treatment version concept art of our Starboy.
Which I don't know.
Written for Asha and the Starboy.
Which I don't know if this was a suggestion or an actual thing, but it does feel like it's the two of them after they got to know each other.
And
people search for a wonder like you all of their lives. You still amaze me after all this time. Like,
it's, yeah, like, it like, picture,
it can be a wedding song.
Picture it in the movie that Candace and I have just invented over the last hour, but if it was like halfway through the movie, they've had this altercation where Asha is like stuck in her rigid magic ways to learn magic, and Starboy is like here with his chaos brand of magic, and they're butting heads. But at this point, they've come to a common understanding. Maybe they like overcame some sort of obstacle together. And this is their quiet moment before the confrontation with the king. And it's a starlit night. They're looking up at the stars like Asha and her dad used to do or whatever. Like they're just sitting there contemplating, and they're having this, I see the light moment, like in Tangled. And they're finally expressing their feelings for one another in this ballad. And then come to the end of the movie, something goes wrong with Asha, with Starboy, with whatever. And they can reprise this song in like a, like when he's making the choice to stay or when she thinks she's going to lose him. Like, because this is so romantic, that is the only function I can think of for this song, is like the midpoint love ballad. Do you know what I mean?
So for in Asha, the demo,
not fit where it in is. The,
yeah, in the demo version sung by Benjamin Rice and Julia Michaels, Love You was in place of Promise. So it was going to be, and I'll love you as one does. I will protect you. That's what it was. Like, instead of, and Promise as one does.
Like, so come the on demo now. Had
love instead.
This was written for Asha and Starboy. I'm convinced this was written for the two of them. There's no other way. This was not written for this scene. And I think that's what makes it, so I hesitate to say offensive, but it almost makes it offensive to use it here, when it was so clearly written for not only a different character in a different context, but like for a completely different story.
It really does feel like a jukebox musical in this part, because it feels so out of place, but you're like, what's an ABBA song? We got to put it in. We only got these songs. Yeah, got to make it work.
No offense to Mamma Mia, but it's Chiquitita. It doesn't need to be there.
Do you know what I mean? Oh no. But like, it's a pretty song. That's the thing.
Beautiful.
It's the best song of this movie. And you feel like,
unironically, love this song. It just doesn't belong where it is.
If I had heard the song and just saw the King Minifica and Asha saying this together, I'd be like, what is this movie?
I saw somebody on Twitter before I saw this movie, out of context, putting these song lyrics side by side with a picture of Magnifico and Asha. And I was like, oh, the villain and the heroine are singing a love ballad. And I walked in, my Raylo ass, completely prepared to ship this. And then I realized they're not even looking at each other. And not only that, like, he's already married and his wife is hot. And
she's 17.
Like that's
she's 17.
But like,
she's 17.
She could be 18. God. Like, but I'm like, oh, this, not at all what was going on, which then begs the question of like, why is this going on? And it's because they had this beautiful song they wanted to use and didn't know how to use it. And then by putting this in here and taking up 3 minutes of time to sing this song, we also lose the opportunity to find out why Asha wants to work for the king, why Asha's qualified to work for the king, why she cares. Like, all of that gets lost for the sake of using this love ballad that you need to stick somewhere because you wrote out the love interest because you're cowards. Like, having a mental breakdown again.
I don't know. It adds nothing is the issue. I wish they changed a few more lyrics to make it hint more that Magnifico wanted to possess these versus, oh, I'll protect you, I'll love you, I promise you. Like, because this is only the second duet between a Disney heroine and a villain. The first one is Love is an Open Door. And there is a hint where Hans is like, I've been trying to figure it out. I've never had my own place. And he's like pointing kind of thing. And he's like,
hashtag team Hans.
Oh, this again. Even though hashtag King Magnifico.
I should ship
hashtag.
It.
Oh, it's not shipping it. It's not shipping it. It's just, he's voiced by Chris Pine.
It's not even that. If this was any other circumstance, I probably would ship it. But I'm so attached to the idea of Starboy that I can't let him go. This
concept that does not exist.
This concept art has me in a chokehold. I can't let it go. I'm just convinced that's the version of the movie that actually happened.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I think it's Brooke Arzy when I suggested this. Yeah, so I saw this movie Saturday after it started streaming, I have been obsessed ever since because I'm trying to figure it out because there is a great movie in there. So let's talk about some of the things that we like about it.
Yes, we did like things about this movie.
Yes, I honestly did like the animation. I know a lot of people had issues with it because of the frame rate made it look cheaper, but it looked like a painting, a watercolor. And thing is, Disney has been playing it safe a bit. And I like when they take chances like that. And it looked pretty on my TV, is all I'm saying. It reminded me. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
The first shaft of Tangled, of the art they were going to use, which was like a stylized like painting animation, but they couldn't like afford to render it. So that was Rapunzel Unbraided, which was going to be more of a Shrek movie. But mm-hmm. Shrek came out and they're like, oh no, pivot kind of thing. So
I also really like the animation style. My brother, while Candace and I were at Disney a couple months ago, my brother watched this by himself and sent me an increasingly unhinged number of text messages about the movie. And one of them was about the animation style. One thing I thought, what I think he said that I thought was interesting was, he was like, it would have been cool if they kept this dual 2D, 3D style, but were like intentional about what was 2D and what was 3D. So like anything that was magic would be one style and anything that wasn't would be another style or something like that. And that would have been really cool to see. But for what it was, I really liked the animation. I thought, they're trying something new. And look, whether or not it lands, they have tried something. I enjoyed it.
Originally, Star was going to be 2D, but they thought it was too different with what they had. And also his little fucking Stardust just didn't, they didn't feel like it was right. So he became 3D. But again, they were trying something new. They're trying something different.
I will never fault them for trying something new.
The cast is freaking amazing.
They're amazing.
Rihanna DeBose. Chris Pine just hamming it up, giving 100%.
Having the time of his life.
Ariana is a Disney princess in my mind.
Oh, Ariana DeBose is amazing. I have no bad things to say about her. She sold it. She did a beautiful job on the music for us, critical as we've been. She has a beautiful voice. So,
again, I would listen to her
anytime. The cast was great. This isn't specific to this movie, but I really like the Disney 100 logo off the top. I'm a sucker for the Disney like opening where it swoops around the castle. It makes me emotional every time. Yeah. And I really liked the 100th one.
I really like the idea of Rosas being like a place that people could just, they could immigrate to. And so you had different ethnicities, you had different languages. And I thought that was a great way to be like telling a story, maybe in a middle age, mixing it up a little bit, not getting us the same thing over again. I'm always excited.
It was a diverse town and I really enjoyed that.
I'm very excited when little girls are able to see themselves on screen. So love Asha for that. My dad said, Asha, that's an Indian name. I'm like, yes, dad, I know. It's also like other people's names. Other cultures have that too.
I'm convinced that Asha's mom is from like West Asia, South Asia, because her name is Sakina.
Oh, don't tell him that. He's going to do a PowerPoint about how they just stole a bunch of Indian stuff.
I'm convinced that Asha is partially, at least, has ancestry from our corner of the world.
Yeah. But I do love, just like Encanto, we have a heroine who isn't royal, who isn't the daughter of a chief. Someone who, and this time she takes on the royals. One royal. And because you're just watching all this stuff. I'm not a princess. But she's a hero.
I like Valentino.
Valentino is so cute.
I like where he's conducting the chickens. I thought that was funny.
That was the most absurd thing in the world.
I was here for it.
I had to watch it again because I wasn't sure if it was in the movie or something one of my parents said. But no, it was one of my parents said. They're like, look at what the chickens are doing to their kids when they were throwing the eggs. I don't know which one of them said it.
What else? I like... love-hate relationship with her friends.
There were three of them.
I like the concept of her group of friends being the Seven Dwarves. I thought that was cute.
Yeah, that's cute.
For some reason, I can't get behind their names. I don't know what it sounds.
So we have Dahlia, which is the best friend, royal baker.
Like Dahlia is Doc, Bazima is Bashful, Gobbo is Grumpy, Simon is Sleepy.
Yep. Played by Evan Peters. Which I didn't know until I was researching this movie.
I'm forgetting the rest of their names, but first of all, the fact that their names aren't super memorable is a problem.
Yeah. Hal is happy. Dario is dopey. And yes, Effie is sneezy. But that's the thing is only really Dahlia and kind of Simon get any real like
arc.
Yeah.
Gabo is like comic relief, but their names sound awkward and not out of place, but like they're trying too hard. The names specifically. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, nor can I verbalize what my issue with these names are, but it needed like another pass.
Honestly, I do. It was a cute idea to have the seven dwarves, but it's just too many kids and not enough of like, I couldn't remember their names when I watched it.
If they had been like
the first time,
Dahlia's kids, add one more kid. So Dahlia is like Snow White and she had seven kids, but we're really only dealing with Dahlia. So we see her kids in the background loosely behaving like the dwarves. And we could be like, oh, that one is sneezy and that one is bashful. But even if she had adopted these kids, but they're her kids, then that would have been like, we don't have to deal with them the whole time.
Yeah. But I think they did. It's good to have a Disney heroine who has human friends her age, which is refreshing because we Dahlia would having seven kids.
Simon's role, somebody else can fill Simon's role. You could have a different friend. That's like a different nod to a different movie. And that's her.
Just have them have seven cats or something. And one's always sneezing and one has big ears and one needs glasses.
Like, it could have been done a different way, but I did like the homage. I like the line introverts deserve a sanctuary too.
That got my dad laughed at that.
That was cute. I like the overall vibe.
I like the message that you might need some help with your wish, but you're the one in charge of it.
Yeah.
And that's what drives us.
It's a good message.
What did you think of the idea that King Magnifico is the magic mirror? Because again, and this time I caught it. And just for a few frames, you see the magic mirror's face. When he gets sucked in.
I don't think it's supposed to be he is canonically that magic mirror. I think it was another like
wink, yeah.
Just like the fact that Asha's running around in the fairy godmother's cloak for half the movie, but I don't think she's the fairy godmother. She is.
Fairy godmother.
Easter eggs. Like, I don't think it was
an origin story, because that's what I first
saw. It's not an origin story. It's not like there's that one theory that went viral on Tumblr like a few years ago of like how all the Pixar movies are connected.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate that theory. Like, I hate all of these things are cinematic. They're not actually a cinematic universe. They're made by the same group of people who are making winks to their own work. Like, that's what they're doing. It's not a cinematic universe. Like, relax. So I don't even think that the intention was that this is the origin story of the magic mirror. I just think he is a magic mirror that you recognize from Snow White. Like, that is the cloak you recognize from Cinderella, but that's not the same person.
Yeah.
I do think, though, and this is like a company thing, this is not a wish thing, that like Disney needs to stop leaning so hard on remember like the nostalgia for the 90s, because like the kids now have no nostalgia for the 90s. You know what I mean? Like these epic stories that so much of Disney like product and movies and theme parks are banking on are nostalgic for us. But the new kids, other than like Frozen and Tangled, I don't know how much they have to really be nostalgic about, because all of the stuff keeps hearkening back to earlier stuff rather than
they're trying to get that forward. Renaissance back.
This is the era of straight to the DVD sequels, and they just need to push through that again. But that's a company-wide issue. But like now that they've put a button on it with this 100th anniversary movie, like I'm hoping the next stuff will. I'm saying this knowing full well the next stuff is like Zootopia 2 and Frozen 3 and like Moana 2.
Moana 2, live action Moana. There is one, I believe, at least original, because it's untitled or like it's like TBA in the next year or two. We'll see. I think it was at Cinema.
CinemaCon? What?
It was like CinemaCon or something. Whatever.
CinemaCon.
Hopefully. And hopefully lessons will be learned.
I'm going to take a moment to plug something real quick. I reviewed it on the Waffle, so it is relevant. Relevant to this whole romance
Oh, I know what this is.
You know what this is. You know what I'm going to talk about. Mm-hmm. Relevant to this whole romance is not important for your arc thing. If you have not read Bravely by Maggie Stiefvater, I'm saying that wrong. I'm positive. If you've not read Bravely, you should. It's a sequel to Brave. It is so extremely Raylo-coded. It's just, it's so good. It's my Roman Empire. I think about it all the time. If you have not read it and you feel like you want a little romance with your badass heroines and you want like lessons of like change is good and change helps you grow, please go read this book. This is like the perfect place to bring it up because it does marry like the romance and the plot, and it doesn't diminish her arc at all, but it does, her arc does not function without this, but it also does not diminish it as a solo arc for Merida. So please, it's such a good example of how to do this. So please go read it.
And honestly, I think opening up yourself to love and having something to lose actually makes your character stronger. So
yeah.
Really surprising that since this is the 100th year and their best movies and their most popular movies are pretty much all romances.
And they just got rid of Starboy.
RP, Starboy.
My favorite. My favorite couple is Asha and Starboy.
Oh, gosh. We could have had Stardust. But like,
I'm mourning Starboy the way I mourn Ben Solo.
Okay, that's on that note. Thank you for joining us on this absurd ride. RC was like, this can take hours. And I was like, no, it's not. And it's
it was almost 90 minutes. We haven't recorded
I'm going to edit it down. Time. So it'll be like 70 minutes.
No, it's 80 minutes right now.
But... yeah, so it'll be about 70 minutes once I edit it down. 10 minutes getting rid of the pauses. And
so much.
Listen, this has been my whole personality for this week. This is all I've talked about. When I bought this shirt at Disney World, because it's 40% off plus my pass holder, 20% off, so it was $19. And I was like, yes, I shall remember this. Hey, look, it's your shit, Arzu.
I want that shirt now.
I mobile checked out and the cast member's like, oh, are you a fan of the movie? And I was like, I liked and disliked things about this movie because I was like, I can't lie to a cast member. They work so hard.
That's when you pick something you like, I love Asha.
Yeah, I think Asha's super cool. I love Starboy.
Yeah, I want that shirt.
Okay, yeah, I'll be back soon. I'm going back thank on you. Wednesday. On that note, thank you for joining us in this insanity. Whoever, like, comment below if you lasted to the end. We would like to know you.
Yeah, if you watched all 70 whatever minutes of this, first of all, thank you.
And if you can diagnose us below, that would be great too.
No, Arzu doesn't want to know. I don't want to know.
We hope you all stay geeky.